three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. My name is Joseph Gore from ESPN and Stats Perform. More importantly, I'm joined on this episode by Ryland Stiles from the Locked On Thunder Podcast, a part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We spoke at length about, rather predictably, Josh Giddey and the Thunder at large. Unlike media from outside OKC, Ryland is actually at these games and watching Josh Giddey in person, which I put a lot of stock in, so it's good to get his thoughts. Now, I don't mean to bury the lead, but Ryland is high on Giddey, and I think he reflects the organization's optimism too. But here's my issue. I'm not a Thunder fan, I'm not a 36ers fan, and nor am I from Melbourne, so I'm not sold on Giddey just yet. I think he's a media darling on a tank job team accumulating amazing stats. Now, does that translate to an all-NBA type career? I'm not sold. As I said, I'm not sold just yet. I'm sorry, Australia. Just giving my honest opinion. I think half of the Giddey mystique in this country is based around the fact that his agent, Daniel Moldovan, of formerly Lighthouse Sports, now Octagon Sports, has done an amazing job for his client. First farming him minutes with the hapless 36ers, improving his draft stock, and now in OKC, where expectations are lower than a limbo bar at the bottom of Lake Eyre. Also, I think Ben Simmons's let's call it universal unappeal, has created an inside lane for Giddey's prosperity and popularity in becoming, quote-unquote, golden boy. I think former Boomers, Andrew Bogut, probably most vocal among them, are either consciously or unconsciously trying to usurp the freakishly talented prima donna that is Ben Simmons with the Melbourne-based, curly-haired, blue-eyed, down-to-earth Giddey. He better fits the all-for-one, one-for-all facade of the Boomers and the NBA lifestyle at large. Although I should probably just shut up and get to the interview with Ryland and stop pissing on the Giddey parade, because the kid's going to be a gravy train for the media over here, and I want a slice. I don't want to cut myself out of the action. Who cares about honesty of opinion? I want to take the shelter in the majority and make some money. Anyway, Ryland was a great guest, super generous with his time and brilliantly articulate with his answers, which came off unrehearsed questions, might I add. The guy's a pro, so if you're listening from the United States, give him a tap on the shoulder. Most importantly, when you listen to this episode, think of this show as like an episode of Dragon's Den or Shark Tank on Giddey's talent. Are you investing? Are you putting your hard-earned cash down on the line? And if you do, what return will you see on his talent? It's okay to be skeptical or cautious. Think about it if you had skin in the game. Ladies and gentlemen, Ryland Stiles. Ryland, I guess the first thing I'll get you to do is introduce yourself to the NBL crowd here in Australia. Who are you? What do you do? And also, where can they follow you on Twitter or your socials and follow your work?
Yeah, so I'm Ryland Stiles. I'm a media member for the Thunder. I cover the team 5 days a week on the Locked On Thunder podcast. It's a podcast network that covers the entire NBA, NFL, MLB, all the American professional sports 5 days a week. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryland_Stiles, at RYLAN_STILES. I'm very happy to be here talking about Josh Giddey and the Thunder.
I guess my first question is, let's cast your mind way back before he's drafted. What was your opinion of him as a player from a great distance when he played in our league for the Adelaide 36ers?
Yeah, so like obviously he played in the NBL and not kind of the college circuit or the G League circuit. And so, you know, watching him, I loved his passing ability. And I thought that, you know, he would be somebody that would be a solid starter for you long term and somebody that can really help facilitate an offense. And he's surpassed that expectation already through these first 34 games he's played. My expectations for him, honestly, were too low whenever I was evaluating him in the pre-draft process.
Another question I have is, this is more of a commercial question, but how did you source that material? How did you watch the NBL from in Oklahoma? Did you watch it on YouTube? Did you get tape sent to you? How did that work?
Yeah, so I was able actually to watch it on YouTube and find full games on YouTube and find highlights on YouTube. Just find different things via YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube. Yeah, that's what I thought, because the league used to have a YouTube and Twitch stream. It's now changed. It's now gone with ESPN and a few others. Ryan, I got this question for you. All right. I want to give you two sets of stats, and you tell me which player you like the sound of better in these two stat categories. Okay. Player one, averaging 16.7 points per game, 41% from the field, 26% from the outside, from 3-point range, 6 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game, 2 steals per game, 3.5 turnovers a game. That's number one. Now, I know that's a lot of stats to remember, but I'll just fly through the next one. The next player, 11 points per game, 40% from the field, 28% from the outside, 7.5 rebounds, 6 assists per game, 1 steal per game, 3 turnovers. They're very similar, but of those two players or two stat lines, which did you prefer?
I think I got to go with the second one.
The second one. And you may be, it's a leaded question, but you're like, I've actually compared two players there. One is Josh Giddey from this season, 2021-22. The other is Michael Carter-Williams from his rookie season. And I guess a bit of a leaded question, but what I'm asking is, what separates Giddey this season from Michael Carter-Williams in his rookie season? They've got very similar stats. I don't know if you remember his play from that year, 2013-14. What people would consider him a strong pro, but not a star. Giddey's getting a quite a reputation as a star. What separates the two in your mind?
I think that with Josh Giddey, it's just the potential and upside that he brings, in the sense of he's making passes that are just unbelievable and passes that you just wouldn't expect anyone to make, much less a 19-year-old kid. And the balancing act that he does has been so impressive to me, of not trying to force those fancy passes. Although he can pass them all fancy and behind the back and do something extra, he also just takes what the defense is going to let him take and sets up the offense in that way. And I think that him understanding he's working his shooting and kind of change his jump shot in the offseason, as he's told us he will do, and we'll work on with Mike Wilkes this offseason, him understanding what he needs to work on, if he can become a league average shooter with his ability to utilize the pick and roll and to pass and to get downhill and to have that floater that he likes to use. And when the Thunder supply him with a big man that can finish lobs, and he can now throw lob passes off of those floaters that he likes to get to, just the reason there's so much optimism around Josh Giddey is that he's putting up these stats, and this team is not even close to being maximized for him. There's not enough shooters for him to pass to. There's not a pick and roll threat for him, really, that he can kind of utilize more often. There's just so many areas where the Thunder can help him out, much less given his hard work ethic and all the things that you guys love about him from his time in the NBL. There's just so many reasons for optimism and not a ton of reasons to be pessimistic. Even his three-point shooting is getting better within this season, and he hasn't even really started to alter his shot or alter kind of the way he goes about the three-point shot. So you're seeing improvement game by game, and again, just the Thunder can help him out so much by being a team that, number one, has a huge reputation of being a positive developmental spot for every player that they kind of bring in, and number two, just building a roster around him that's more conducive to winning and more conducive to his skill sets that they have not done yet, because they've only had him for a couple months.
That's what I was going to, when you say geared towards winning, I mean, would you, if people describe the Oklahoma City Thunder as tanking this season, do you think that's accurate or is that cynical?
Yeah, I think that tanking this season in the sense of how they built the roster is accurate, in the sense of once the ball's tipped off tonight against the Wizards, are they going to be playing their hardest? Yes, they will be playing their hardest, but there's just not enough talent and veteran talent around this team right now to win games. And so these young guys are trying very hard, and you have to give them credit for every night they're competing hard. And you can tell within the game, whenever they don't roll over after they get down by 15 points out of the gate, you can tell how hard they want to win and how hard they want to compete. But tanking in the NBA kind of goes more so with your general manager and how you build a team versus the players actually on the team. These players are trying their hardest, but this team just does not have the right pieces right now to win games.
That's where my worry comes up, because when Giddey put up the triple-double, that obviously made great waves over here, youngest player in the NBA ever, that was a big thing. But I just find it so hard to read into his stats, because when you're on a tanking team, I mean, every NBA team's going to put up 100 or so points. It's going to grab 50-some rebounds, thereabouts. Someone's got to get him. Giddey gets 35 minutes. So stats for me are hard to
get optimistic about. That's why I brought someone like you on, who's there in the stadium and can see the intangible type stuff. I guess I want to talk about that similarity between, that's why I brought up Michael Carter-Williams, because you can see that comparison or similarity between that Sixers team that he was on in 13-14 and this team of Giddey and the Thunder of 21-22. Is the Oklahoma City Thunder on that same trajectory as the Philadelphia 76ers that now they've come through it somewhat? Do you see your team as being on the same road, I suppose?
Yeah, I think the Thunder are kind of set up better than that Sixers, you know, kind of unit was, as Sam Hinkie kind of invented this style, so to say, or at least gets a lot of credit for it. I think that with the Thunder having only been 1 year into this rebuild so far, I mean, that's the thing that it gets lost in Oklahoma, is just that, you know, we're only a year into like not truly competing anymore. And it's going to take some time. It's going to take a process, but already out of the gate, you have a guy like Shea, you have a guy like Giddey, who is going to be a foundational pieces for you to go try to win a championship. And that's not even factoring in your mountain of draft picks that features three first round picks in this draft class alone. So I think that the Thunder are set up to where if they can get some luck in the NBA lottery this offseason and they get a high pick, well, then all of a sudden now that they're going to have three foundational pieces in year two of this rebuild, then you can start using some of those future picks to use them on the trade market and trade for ready-made NBA players and NBA stars even who want out of their current situation. So I think that the Thunder have a path to competing a lot sooner, maybe in 2 years and 3 years, to be competing and be like a Memphis type team, as you see Memphis being this year, where they're really, really good, but they're still kind of young and need to grow through some growing pains in the playoffs, and then be a title contender as you get further down the line in Josh Giddey's career and SGA's career together, and they're meshing together. I will say that with Josh Giddey, I've seen tanking basketball again. Last year got really crazy. For those of you that weren't paying attention to the Thunder, last year they were playing players that honestly shouldn't have been in the NBA. And what Josh Giddey's stat line to me is doing is nothing about compiling stats just because he's on the floor. And we saw that last year. There was players last year who got these numbers and got crazy stats that do not make sense on their basketball reference page because of the fact that they play a lot on a tanking team. But with Josh Giddey, his stats actually should be better than they are right now. If he had a team around him that was better than what he has now, his stats would be way better. I think that his rebounding is real. I think that his rebounding is not a factor of him being in the right spot, right? Or the teammates letting him get the rebounds. He is truly working down low, boxing out, kind of working around defenses and being able to end possessions. And that's what's so big for the Thunder, who don't play with a traditional center. You have to have players who can find ways to end possessions. And Josh Giddey's done that. I think that his assist numbers are vastly too low because of the fact of these players aren't really good at shooting threes. And so whenever he kicks out to them, oftentimes they don't make it, or oftentimes they need to pass it up to somebody else. And so, and again, mentioning the pick and roll, not having a traditional center, not having a lob threat also hurts Giddey as a kind of a lead ball handler. So I think that his stats are legit. And is, again, as long as he can truly work on his 3-point game this offseason and kind of get that to 35%, 36%, then the sky is truly the limit for Josh Giddey. And he can be one of these Jason Kidd type of players. So, I mean, I wrote a whole article about comparing his first-year stats, the Jason Kidd's first-year stats, and how I think that those two players are going to be very comparable throughout Giddey's career. And if that happens, well, then the Thunder have a Hall of Famer and a 19-time All-Star and an NBA champion. So I think that with Josh Giddey, these are stats that I do not worry about being just from compiling. I think that they're kind of legit.
So, and do you think you're with the majority on that thinking that here's Josh Giddey, foundational piece. This is not a guy who we're going to see moved on and before his rookie extension or whatever it is. Do you think are you alone in that, or are most people like, no, it's those two in the backcourt, him and SGA?
Yeah, I think most people agree with me on that. And I know within the organization that they truly love Josh Giddey, and Josh Giddey loves being here. From everything that he said publicly and privately, he loves being in Oklahoma City. He desperately wanted his agent to get him here. The Thunder did everything they could to coordinate a private workout with him in Vegas. I'm sure that all of you have kind of gone over this story multiple times, but you know, whenever we talk to Josh Giddey, you know, the NBA makes draft prospects available to all of the media before the draft, because you don't know who your team's going to pick. When we talked to Josh Giddey at that time, he was honest with us and said, I cannot work out with teams because I have these commitments to the Australian national team. And at that time, we thought, hey, he's not working out with anybody. And he said he went to Chicago and he met with teams, but he couldn't work out with them. He had to get back to his national team responsibilities. And so the Thunder still, though, made time to fly him out there to Vegas and to work with him with their head coach, their GM, and their owner. All three of them went to Vegas just to meet this guy and to make sure they could get him at pick six, whenever it was considered at the time a big reach. But he's their guy, and he's who they want to build with. Mm-hmm. And they've said the right things about having Josh Giddey and SGA work together and kind of find out a pairing that can work for them long term. So I think that Josh Giddey will be in Oklahoma City for as long as he wants to stay in Oklahoma City, and that this team is really invested in him.
It's funny you say that, pairing him with SGA. There was a thing on The Ringer, I think it was on YouTube, a nice little dissection of, well, SGA's game, Giddey's game, and then Poku and this team at large. Did you see that by The Ringer? It was by a guy by the name, I've got it written down here, Kyle Mann, I think his name is, Joel Kermit. Did you see that? It was called mm-hmm. Funkiest Duo in the NBA. What did you see of that? J. Kyle Mann was his name. What did you make of that video and their contentions within it that I've got it here? Will Giddey become more than a good player with specific fit guidelines? What do you think of sort of that, his contentions?
Yeah, I think that the fit with Josh Giddey and SGA are interesting because the Thunder have been preaching that they're going to draft positionless basketball players since before they drafted Josh Giddey. And so that was kind of setting the foundation for, hey, any player can play any position, and we're going to draft who we think is the best overall player. And that's what they do with Josh Giddey. They thought that he's the best overall player. He's played point guard his whole life. He told us that the day he was drafted, I've never played with another point guard in my entire life. I've never played with a lead guard like SGA before. And so here's a guy in Josh Giddey who's having to come over to the NBA, get used to an entirely different league, and also get used to a entirely different position of now I'm sharing the responsibilities of a point guard with somebody who's a all-star caliber player in SGA, somebody who demands respect, somebody who demands the basketball and demands that usage rate. And Josh Giddey has had to conform to that and is still putting up these really good stats. I think that long-term with the Thunder, what gives all of us optimism about their pairing together is that we've already seen Shea play off ball. His first year with the Thunder would run three guard lineups with Chris Paul and him and Dennis Schroeder, and it worked to perfection. And SGA was an incredible player off ball, and his numbers on the catch and shoot were great. His numbers this year on the catch and shoot are great, but he only shoots about one catch and shoot shot a game. And so you're seeing the benefits of Josh Giddey being that point guard and maximizing the offense that way. And so long-term, maybe it will be best for Josh Giddey to be the long-term point guard, and SGA plays off ball more as he did his first year. And I think that what's optimistic for the Thunder fans is that SGA wants to win and Josh Giddey wants to win. They're both very passionate players. They're both players who just care about winning. And so when push comes to shove, if that's what's going to maximize the offense, then that's what they're going to do. And I think that with Josh Giddey and SGA, they can play off each other. And that's not to say that Josh Giddey can't play off ball. I think that Josh Giddey, of course, as he progressed through his career, he's only 19 years old. He could learn how to play off ball, but it might be best for him to play on ball and SGA to play off ball. I think that they're going to mesh together and be versatile. And there's also a scenario where if they want to stagger minutes the way that the Rockets did back when they had Chris Paul and James Harden, where you start the game and close the game with SGA and Josh Giddey, but throughout the middle of that game, only one's on the floor at a time, and they're leading the group and they're leading the offense at a time. And that way you're never without kind of a star player. Mm.
Side note on that, just looking at the team at large, the Thunder, currently, as when I checked it anyway, Australia's got weird timing, but currently second last in the West at 13 wins, 26 losses. Do you think you're going to get to 20 wins? What do you think is the end of season projection for the team?
Yeah, I think that if they can stay healthy, they can reach 20 wins, but obviously it'll be difficult to see the path for the Thunder to actually win some of these games. They're losing some really close ones. They're continuing to put up fights in these games. And the question for me about 20 games just simply comes to how long can you get these young guys to buy in for? How long can you get them to continue to fight every night while losing? Because it's eventually going to wear on you that you're losing games and losing four straight, losing five straight games at a time. And eventually that's going to kind of wear you down to where can you keep that energy and effort and intensity up in March and in, you know, the later stages of the season. If they can do that, I think they can get to 30 wins. I mean, I should say 20 wins, not 30 wins, 20 wins. But again, health and keeping their kind of, I should say, you know, kind of blissful ignorance or their kind of passion for the game and not kind of letting it wear down them as they can see that end in sight. They know they're not a playoff team right now. They can kind of see that end of the season down the tunnel. As you get closer to that light at the end of the tunnel of going on vacation, going into your off season with your family, can you still stay engaged in the game as they have done so far this season? We'll see if they can do it. But if I had to bet right now, I'd still bet that the Thunder do get the 20 wins.
There's been a lot of love for Giddy in this country, and quite naturally. And this is more of a thought, but if you can comment on it, if you'd like to, you certainly can. But there's been a whole lot of love for Giddy in Australia, particularly from Australia's past greats, Chris Anstey, Andrew Bogut, probably most vocal among them. I think as much as it is to do with Giddy's game, which has been quite impressive, I think a lot of it's got to do with, number one, Warwick. I don't know if you've met Warwick. That's Josh Giddey's father. He played in Australia here in the NBL, the National League. Super popular, super fun, loving guy, I mean, even as a player and as a person, apparently. I think it's got more to do with that. And then also the fact that it's really quite a sad fact that Josh Giddey and Ben Simmons are always going to be plugged one against the other. And I think when we're talking about, I'm talking about Bogut's praise, a lot of it feels like because Ben Simmons has declined to play for the national team, whereas Giddy so embraced it, it's kind of this thing where their focus has shifted from Ben Simmons to Josh Giddy. And I guess my question to you is, have you by any chance felt that from an Australian pool from the media, if you've observed it? Have you seen that? Do you think I'm crazy in that theory?
No, I totally agree with you. I think that's what's kind of the most interesting thing of, like, after the draft, Josh Giddey immediately said that Joe Ingles called him and congratulated him and kind of has been his mentor through this process. And as you said, he's made it known to us in the U.S. media that he loves playing for the national team. He wants so bad to be able to play in the Olympics for Team Australia. And I obviously think he's going to get there the next go around, but he cares. He cares a lot about Australia. He cares a lot about being a ambassador, I think, for Australian basketball and kind of leading a path for younger and younger players to get into the NBA and to thrive in the NBA or in the NBL or whatever they view as their best avenue for basketball. He wants to kind of be a leader, it feels like, from what he said, kind of about his career and about his love for Australia. I think that you can feel the nation backing him as well whenever you look at podcast download numbers, and 50% of your audience is coming from Australia now. And wow, every time you put a YouTube video up with Josh Giddey, you're getting 1,000 views on a YouTube video. And your Twitter followers are now all of a sudden a lot of Australian media and Australian fans. Like, you can kind of feel how much they're embracing Josh Giddey and in turn embracing the Thunder. And I think that's a great thing to see, that you're staying up late hours, weird hours, just to watch Josh Giddey play basketball for a team that's not winning games. I think that has to feel special for Josh Giddey to know that he's making that kind of an impact.
Let me ask you this question. If, let's say you're the GM of the Thunder, they give you that gig, and the 76ers come knocking and they say, listen, we'll give you Ben Simmons for Josh Giddey. What I'm having trouble separating the two, and I think that Ben is the superior player, and I look at Simmons and I kind of go, oh, that's the guy I'd go with long-term, just because of his athleticism. I mean, the shot I don't think is ever going to come, but the athleticism is just so far superior to Josh Giddey. Would you take that trade?
Yeah. So with that scenario, I think that you got to factor in everything involved. I think that obviously you have to give the upside edge to Josh Giddey. Now, will he reach a 3-time All-Star, kind of all defensive NBA, all NBA caliber of Ben Simmons? I think that there's a chance he does by the time he's 25, but that's not a guarantee the way it is with Ben Simmons. But with Ben Simmons, you're also you're trading in a 19-year-old for a 25-year-old, and you're trading in a 19-year-old who has said how much he loves Oklahoma City and has said that he demanded he got to Oklahoma City from his agent, for a guy who has not even been happy in Philadelphia and does not seem like a small market kind of guy and does not seem like somebody who would be happy playing for a team at the current stage the Thunder are at right now. So I would not do that, just given the fact of, I don't think Ben Simmons would want to be in Oklahoma City long-term. And so I'm trading my upside and my young piece, who kind of matches my trajectory a lot more. You think about it to where, if we can agree that the Thunder are 3 years away from truly competing for a title, 3 years from Josh Giddey at 19 years old is very different from 3 years at Ben Simmons, who's already 25 years old. And so that happens with age, but also with contract. Like the Thunder have Josh Giddey, you know, you typically get rookies for about 9 years whenever they first sign that initial long-term deal. They have nine more years of Josh Giddey. And with Ben Simmons, you'd have about three more years under his contract right now. And so then at the time you finally got good and you finally kind of wanted him to be that focal point, he's a free agent in 2025. And how are you going to re-sign a guy who has pretty well made it known that he wants to be in a bigger market? He signed with Clutch Sports with Rich Paul, who is LeBron's agent and is kind of the big personality that will get him to LA or get him to whatever market he wants to be in. I mean, even this offseason, he talked about how he does not want to go to Toronto, he wants to only go to California teams. And so the Thunder just can't provide that lifestyle that Ben Simmons wants to have. And so given all of those factors, plus banking on Josh Giddey's upside. I mean, I told you that I think that Josh Giddey has Jason Kidd upside. Right. I would just go ahead and keep Josh Giddey for all of those reasons.
Let me answer this question though. I've looked at the betting here in Australia and Rookie of the Year. Well, Josh Giddey is fifth favorite to win Rookie of the Year. So my question to you, Ryland, is if I roll back the clock and again put you in the position of GM of the Thunder and gave you the first pick, would you still take Josh Giddey with that first pick over the likes of an Evan Mobley who leads that category and looks like a really good player?
Yeah, knowing what we know now, I think if you redrafted this draft, your top three in some order would have to be Mobley, Barnes, and Giddey. And it just comes down to how you view is best building your team. I think that you'd have to go with Barnes or Giddey if you don't like a traditional big man, but Evan Mobley's proven to be kind of a more of a non-traditional big man, where it's more of a versatile big. So it becomes a really tough decision. You have three very versatile players. I think that I'd take Barnes one, Mobley and Giddey 2-3. And that's just how good this draft class is. I mean, Cade Cunningham, who was a lock to go number one the entire calendar year. In fact, for really two calendar years, he was a lock to go number one in this draft. And he's kind of not in the top three of a redraft right now. And that is the historic draft that we talked about all draft cycle long last year. The draft cycle last year was a ton of praise, and it was kind of compared to 2003 as one of the best classes we've seen. And it's proven to be that way. There's so many good talents that it's really hard to decipher them in year one. But I think that Josh Giddey has an argument. I think that even though I said Barnes and Mobley and Giddey, I think that you can easily argue that it should be Giddey, Mobley and Barnes, or any other concoction of those three.
Okay. The other question I've got for you is Olga Nulich used to write for ESPN over here in Australia. He's now Josh Giddey's manager. I don't suppose. Have you met him? What does he do to busy himself during Thunder games?
Yeah, I actually haven't met him yet, but Josh Giddey's talked a lot about him in our kind of pre-game interviews or post-game interviews. We talked to him about media day after the draft press conference. And he's also talked a lot about him on his TikTok live streams. I don't know if you guys have kind of caught those, but
I personally haven't, but I know of them. Yeah.
Yeah. It creates great content just going in there and listening to what he's got to say. It seems like they're really close and that he does a great job of kind of getting Josh set up and, kind of getting him moved in and getting everyone embraced. I think that it's a great partnership for them. And I think that with Josh Giddey, he's talked about it before too, but having his sister up the road in Tulsa is awesome. I think that it's always good to have somebody that you're kind of familiar with. I mean, I couldn't imagine at 19 years old leaving everything I know and going to Australia, right? Like putting yourself in the reverse of what these players are doing. I couldn't imagine that. I think that it's good to have somebody that you're kind of familiar with that you're just kind of 2 hours away from that you can just go pop in and see if you get kind of homesick or whatever the case is. So I think that it's all working out pretty well right now.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Giddey comes from a storied basketball family. I mean, his father, as I said before, his father, Warwick, played in our league, the NBL. His mother played in the WNBL, and his sister plays. You know, this is a family business for them, to be fair. Yeah, right. So, and they're very interesting to all talk to. I hope you get the chance to speak to Mr. and Mrs. Giddey at some point. I guess my final question is this. How would you forecast Giddey's career? What stops him becoming Ricky Rubio, and are you someone like Ricky Rubio? Not there's anything wrong with being Ricky Rubio by all means, but he's not that superstar, you know, NBA first, second, third team type talent. Well, how do you forecast Giddey's career if you're a betting man and putting a GM hat on? Is he a future NBA all-teamer or all-timer? Pardon me.
Right. Yeah, I think if I was a betting man, that I kind of would view it the same way that you kind of portray the other questions as a GM right now. And so the trade deadline comes up in a month's time. How would I kind of evaluate these prospects and evaluate these players as assets? And I think that with Josh Giddey right now, my evaluation of him would be, this guy can be Jason Kidd, who's a top 75 player of all time, who's a Hall of Famer, who's an NBA champion. This guy can be that level, and it's up to us. And again, if I was a GM, it's up to us to develop that and to cultivate that. And so I would protect Josh Giddey at all costs if I was a GM, and keep him with my organization at all costs. I think that the only thing that can hold him back would be if he can't progress his three-point shot. And the reason that doesn't really concern me as much is because I think that with Josh Giddey, he does not need to be Steph Curry. He does not need to be an elite three-point shooter. He just needs to get a defense to respect him and to not play him the way that you play Ben Simmons, where you're dropping down to the mid-paint and you're just not even around him in the perimeter. If you can get a defender to come up on Josh Giddey, he can make a play off of that by dribbling past you and kicking out, or by getting to the lane and getting to his floater because he pump faked and got you in the air, and you know how comfortable he is shooting that floater. I think that the only thing he needs to do to really take this in the next level is to become a 30% three-point shooter, a 35% three-point shooter. And in his first year, he's 27% right now. And recently, in the last week, although it's a very, very, very small sample size, he shot better from three. He said that he's kind of gotten more used to the NBA game, and he's kind of gotten more comfortable shooting. So I think that with Josh Giddey, I would definitely kind of put him in that category of more so a Jason Kidd than a Ricky Rubio. And again, like you said, nothing wrong with being Ricky Rubio, but given the foundation the Thunder have in the sense of their reputation of developing players and how good they are at developing players reputation-wise, and given the fact that, as you mentioned, it's a family business, and everything you hear about Josh Giddey, that he's a very hard worker and that he really is passionate about being the best he can possibly be as a basketball player, given those facts, I think that there's no reason to think that he can't get to that kind of Jason Kidd level and can't get better than a Ricky Rubio level player.
That's perfect, Ryland. I appreciate it very much. Just my last question, actually, I want to say is, so you're sitting, you commentate games, you're there in the stadium for the games, the home games.
The home games, yeah.
Yeah, and you sit there and you commentate it for Thunder Radio, am I right? Or sort of. Sorry,
I commentate basketball for a Cameron University here in Oklahoma. It's a it's a different entity, but yeah, I sit there and watch the games at the Thunder games.
Great, yeah, no, I appreciate. And how did, for people who listen, because I got a lot of people listening who are coming into sports journalism or attempting to, just quickly, what has been your path to where you're at?
Yeah, so I think that the biggest thing is just starting, and that sounds kind of cliche, but it's true. And in the era that we live in right now, we are so fortunate. I mean, I am 24 years old and getting to live out my dream right now of being a radio broadcaster for Cameron University and also getting to cover the Thunder 5 days a week and getting to, do a podcast for them 5 days a week about the Thunder. And so it's simple as just starting. You have all the resources you need at your local store, at Walmart or at your local grocery store, of just getting a microphone, getting a computer, and just recording. And it's not going to be good your first time. If I go back and listen to the podcast I made in high school, that's when I started making podcasts, was in high school. If I go back and listen to those, it is the worst thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But as you get more repetition, as you get more kind of practice, it's like anything else, you're going to get better at it. And you just carve out your niche audience. You talk about what you want to talk about, and you just go at it, and you just see how it can grow. And it's, at first, it's not going to be a ton of listeners. Like my first ever podcast I made, I was happy when it got 25 listeners. And now it's just unbelievable how much that this podcast, kind of rakes in terms of audiences. And that's a large part due to the Australian faithful that now follow Josh Giddey. Mm-hmm. But you just got to try it out and see if you like it in this day and age. There's not really a great formula. I will say, if you're in university, your sports information department will always need help, and you can help them out by writing for your school website and getting up game recaps and even broadcasting the way that I do for my school. There's always an avenue now to kind of get involved in this. And even if it's just sitting in your room and recording a podcast by yourself, that is a level of experience that you can get by doing absolutely nothing besides getting a microphone and a computer and just seeing how you kind of survive. But it's been a lot of fun. Yeah. I do the broadcast for Cameron, which actually has a couple of Melbourne, or actually a trio of Melbourne players on their women's basketball team. They have two players and a coach from Melbourne, Australia. So that's another connection there to Australia. Mm.
Yeah, well, Melbourne is a universe to itself. You've got Melbourne and then the rest of Australia, and that's where Giddy's from, and that's where it works out. Roland, I really appreciate you taking the time for me. Thanks very much.
I appreciate it.
Well, that's it. That's the end of the interview. Thank you very much, everyone. And thank you, Ryland, again for your time. If you liked the show, hey, become a Patreon member. The link's in the description. We've reached 25 patrons. So Andrew and I will do something special for that milestone and those patrons very, very soon. Thank you again to everyone who signed up. That's all from me, and I will see you next time.